Hello and welcome to The Whole Health Cure, a space for trustworthy, science-based information on how you can live healthier and longer through the way you eat, move, think, and recover. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, a physician, scientist, and lifestyle medicine pioneer with over 25 years of experience in patient-centered clinical care. Prostate cancer affects 1 in 8 men and is the second leading cause of death in men in the United States. If you're a man or have a significant other in your life who's a man, you'll want to hear this episode. We're going to talk about how to reduce the risk through lifestyle. And if you're a regular listener, you won't be surprised that your diet is a big part of that. We're going to delve into what foods you should eat and other lifestyle measures. Today, I've got two guests, Dr. Benny Gavi, who's a graduate of Harvard Medical School and current clinical assistant professor of medicine at Stanford University. For the first 16 years of his career, Dr. Gavi practiced medicine in a hospital setting at Harvard and Stanford. In 2012, he expanded to an internal medicine practice to focus on personalized healthcare. I'm also joined by Maya Alon, who's a Doctor of Medicine candidate at Central Michigan University College of Medicine, pursuing her passion for helping others through holistic healthcare and preventive medicine. And they are both the authors of Preventing Prostate Cancer, Reduce Your Risk with Simple, Proactive Choices. Benny and Maya, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
So for our listeners, this is such a small world. Before we hopped on, Benny and I were talking. We were actually classmates in medical school. We have both found our way to the power of lifestyle. So it's great to catch up, and I'm excited to have this conversation. Let me just start by asking, I'll start with you, Benny. How did you get interested in prostate cancer?
About 7 or 8 years ago in my medical practice, an office-based practice, I had several men that I was working with that had prostate-related issues. It was impactful to me how much the men were suffering with the prostate cancer and the side effects of the treatment. And I think that many doctors get trained with the idea that prostate cancer can be detected and managed and is often not very aggressive, can be cured or put into remission. However, I was struck by how common it is and how difficult it is from a quality of life perspective. And so the men that I was working with were struggling with low energy, low libido, or sexual interest. They were struggling with sexual functioning that was less than they were used to. It was affecting intimacy. It was affecting their relationship. Sometimes they were hesitant to leave their home because they were concerned about bladder control. So there was more social isolation. On top of that, they really didn't talk to anyone about it. One of my patients started seeing people less, but I don't think people had any idea why he wasn't getting on the highway and driving 30 minutes to come and see them. It was a quality of life issue, and it's something that was not being discussed because many men, some don't talk about these private matters publicly. So I was curious to learn how I can help. And around this same time, I was discovering lifestyle medicine and the impact that the way that we live our life can reduce disease. And so I became curious around lifestyle medicine and prostate health and prostate cancer. And to my surprise, there was a lot of information. There were hundreds of studies. And I said, boy, this is a big secret that people don't know about. And I was at Harvard, at Stanford. How come I don't know about this? And so I began to learn.
Yeah. And, you know, Benny, I would say the same in my practice. I think prostate cancer and the treatments, as you mentioned, have just so many side effects. I mean, sexual, urinary, and I do think conversations around it are really hard for patients to start talking about. It always makes me think of breast cancer. I take care of a lot of women, and I think women very openly talk about a lot of post-cancer treatment from reconstruction and surgeries and what it's like to go through. I think men tend to talk about it less or bring up the side effects and just live with it silently. So I'm very excited that you are highlighting this. And I think we've done a lot of podcasts. It's amazing to me how few, if any, have addressed prostate cancer risk, whereas just about every other chronic disease we've talked about, heart disease, diabetes, various cancers. So I'm very appreciative of all the attention you've brought on to this. And Maya, so tell me how your path crossed with Benny's. How did this teamwork begin?
Yeah, so I'm very interested in preventive medicine and, you know, stopping diseases before they have the chance to develop. And I feel like with cancer, people often have a lot of fear surrounding cancer because it does feel so out of our control. But prostate cancer, like Dr. Gavi was saying, is so interconnected with lifestyle. And that's kind of where my interests like overlapped with Dr. Gavi's passion. And it was just very fortuitous. I was finishing college and applying to med school, and it worked out perfectly.
Oh, that's wonderful. With all the lifestyle tools, what would you say is the most impactful for prevention?
I guess, fortunately, there have been hundreds of studies around lifestyle and prostate cancer. I think many doctors aren't aware of most of them, if not all of them. But we do have a lot of science. And most of the science is pointing towards food. And perhaps that's not surprising, because food is a very intimate way by which our ecosystem or contexts interact with our biology. I mean, there are hundreds of chemicals that are being introduced into our body and are in intimate contact with our cells and circulation and our body and our immune system. So it's probably shouldn't be a surprise to us that food has the biggest impact on prostate cancer and other cancers as well. And then we can get more into the details, but it's primarily food. But there is also data that physical activity and percent body fat also have a role.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Talking about food, well, let's jump into food. So I know big on your list are cruciferous vegetables. So tell me about cruciferous vegetables and prostate cancer.
So just for maybe listeners who don't know what cruciferous vegetables are, that includes like broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage. It's quite a big family of vegetables. They're really super fighters against cancer and especially prostate cancer because they have chemicals in them called phytochemicals, which are chemicals that they produce that our bodies cannot produce for ourselves. So we have to get them from our diets. And specifically, cruciferous vegetables have glucosinolates, which are powerful antioxidants. And each member of this vegetable family has a unique nutrient profile that also gives them a lot of other fighting capabilities in our bodies, like fiber, calcium, magnesium, B vitamins. All of these things make them really powerful.
So phytochemicals are the magic of plant food, right? I mean, there are 100,000 of them, or maybe even more. I mean, that's how many we've discovered, right? So this is the big push for variety. And cruciferous vegetables, so the glucosinolates, like you mentioned, are such an important part in sulforaphane. I know in Brussels sprouts are a big part of the cancer reduction. For people who want to incorporate more into their diet, first of all, how much should they eat for prostate cancer prevention?
We recommend what the American Cancer Society recommends, which is 2.5 cups a day of vegetables. But again, I feel like you should try to incorporate what you can into your lifestyle, what brings you pleasure, what works with your day-to-day activities. 2.5 cups is kind of the gold standard, maybe.
Yeah. And any tips on preparation, right? Because you've got the myrosinase enzyme on these cruciferous vegetables, and they have to activate the phytochemical, right? So there are different parts of the plant. So to get the most out of the cruciferous, do you recommend people chop it a little bit before to get the enzyme to activate the phytochemical? Any recommendations you have around cooked, chopped, frozen for people who want to get that 2.5 cups?
Yeah, chopping, cooking. One thing that we focus on in the book a lot is having the whole plant, not just going for that phytochemical extract, like not just going to that one thing, because the whole plant does have so many other qualities that although might not be the main component that's helping you fight cancer, it's definitely helpful for your health and for your health outcomes. So that's the biggest thing, just making sure you are having that whole plant and not going to an extract, for example.
Maya, that's such an important point. And Ben, you probably want to add to that, like whole food and the difference between whole food versus supplementation.
I think what I would add as a practicing doctor, I think one of the hardest things for people is to make those lifestyle changes. How do you go from point A to point B to point C? And it's a journey. But I think that I'm a big fan of incorporating pleasure and maintaining pleasure in food. And so I think one of the important questions for me is how to help people incorporate more of these foods into their life and how to do it in a way that brings pleasure. Because I do think that more is better and most of us can benefit from more. And so in what way can more cruciferous vegetables be part of people's breakfast, lunch, and dinner? I think that the pleasure, what do people enjoy? And I also think that people's sense of pleasure can evolve over time. So something that people may not find pleasurable now, maybe after some time, people's tastes evolves. None of us were born liking coffee, but then a lot of us like coffee. So our taste evolves. And I do think that helping people explore the foods in the way that their tastes can evolve such that there's also pleasure. And then there's also the satisfaction that you're eating a food that's healthy for you. So there's kind of an extra dose of pleasure. I'm a big believer in supporting people around that. I think it's hard to ask people to do things long-term that take away from pleasure.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It has to be delicious, right? It can't just be good for you. And as a sidebar, I actually co-authored a plant-based cookbook that's coming out next month. And we were asked a lot, like, how do you make vegetables, right? How do you cook with the various plant-based ingredients that we were promoting? So we put together our favorite collection. So I couldn't agree more. It's got to taste good. And even kids have to like it if you are a part of a big family.
And related to that is maybe people cooking together more.
Yes.
You know, I think it's also an activity that can bring people together. There's so many emotional qualities to food. And one of that could be preparing the food together. And the healthiest food that people have is the food that they cook together with their family in their own kitchen.
Yeah. Oh, couldn't agree more. So cruciferous vegetables, what else should people eat for prostate cancer prevention?
Another big one that we looked at was tomatoes, and specifically the lycopene in tomatoes. But again, as we said, for cruciferous vegetables, the lycopene is amazing, but all the benefits you get from tomatoes as a whole are really where the money's at. And then the fun studies in the tomato chapter that we talked about was the like additive benefits of having tomatoes and cruciferous vegetables. So like alone, each one of these is incredible, but there is such a cumulative effect of adding one vegetable to another and having that, you know, full rainbow salad in front of you.
Yeah. And so the biggest source right now of lycopene, is it ketchup?
What tomato sauce? Yeah. Yeah, specifically the like canned mashed up tomato sauce has the highest level of lycopene.
So does that count for prostate cancer prevention?
It's still something. We can't, like, we would be remiss to recommend anything other than the whole tomato, but it's better than nothing.
I think it does have more sugar and more salt. There are other aspects of health besides cancer prevention. There's more calories. I think that it could make issues worse around blood pressure, weight management. So I think that there are lycopenes and it's good from a prostate cancer prevention. But I think I would make a big plug for the beautiful variety of tomatoes that we have. Some of the heirloom tomatoes, there's some really flavorful tomatoes, and with a little bit of seasoning could be really delicious.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always blown away by the varieties of each plant food category, just the number of types of tomatoes that you can get, for example.
I think also sometimes people talk about sort of the time or even the costs that it takes into plant-based food or delicious plant-based foods. And I sometimes tell people, yeah, it takes a little bit of time and you're busy, but maybe you don't have time to get sick. Getting sick takes time out of your schedule as well. And so I think that by keeping healthy, you know, maybe it doesn't take more time if you're preventing illness. And the time and the costs related to illness, not that we do it only for that purpose, but I tell people, you know, you're too busy. You don't have time to get sick. So you need to eat healthy.
Absolutely. And to put this all in perspective, I know we're talking about the specific foods, but if a person focuses on getting the recommended amount of the foods that you are recommending, what percent reduction can they expect in the risk of prostate cancer?
I'm going to say 30 to 50%. And there are additional benefits, which I can even let Maya talk about, but heart disease, stroke, weight, blood pressure, environmental, planet. I mean, there's so many positive consequences of people eating more plants. It's prostate cancer and a lot more. And it does look to me like evolutionarily, humans have evolved to eat more plant-based.
Yeah, some of the studies we looked at, kind of like what Dr. Ravi was saying, it was like 30 to 50% reduction in prostate cancer incidence and an even higher reduction in lethal forms of prostate cancer. So you even have a lesser chance of dying from prostate cancer, which is also significant. It's hard to put an exact number on how much of a reduced risk you will have. Practice of lifestyle changes is so variable. But I think it's important to say that, like Dr. Ravi was saying, this not only reduces your risk for prostate cancer, but for a bunch of other leading causes of mortality in the US, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, other cancers. And there's no data that shows that eating a healthier diet is going to have a bad impact on your life. So whatever the percentage is, it's going in the right direction.
Now, that's the beautiful thing about plant-based diets, right? They reduce the risk of multiple diseases because the pathways are very similar. How about for, we're talking about prevention, and by the way, it's real interesting. We had a guest a while back, Dr. Dawn Musalem, who was talking about breast cancer risk reduction. She's at the Mayo Clinic, and plant-based diets, she said at minimum are probably 30% effective in prevention. Upper estimates are up to 70%. I mean, these numbers are really staggering, right? I mean, we're just throwing them out as statistics, but when you think of the number and millions of lives that would be affected, it's really staggering.
Right. That's kind of one of the drives behind our book was just like we were looking through the incidence of prostate cancer and how much of it could be attributed to genetics. And it's not as big as people think. And it can't be attributed to ethnicity. That association is not as big of a risk factor as people would think. So really, what is it coming down to? It's lifestyle. And if people have this knowledge, if they know that they have within their power the chance to reduce their risk for something that could really impact their quality of life, if not end their life, that's a powerful bit of information to give people.
Mm-hmm. So cruciferous vegetables, tomatoes for their lycopene. What else is on the list?
A great one is green tea. That one's an easy one to add to any diet. It's just nice to have a good drink and iced tea. We talk a lot about iced tea and specifically sencha green tea. If you like that one, it has a very powerful risk reduction for prostate cancer and it's an easy thing to incorporate into a diet.
So do you guys drink the green tea every day?
As much as possible.
I drink green tea most days and sometimes I purchase a green tea that will have a little pomegranate or a little bit other fruit. Just because you get a little more antioxidant from that fruit as well, and also just gives it a little more flavor. And so I have a variety of teas and a variety of green tea just to kind of add interest. And I'll put another plug that I really want these lifestyle interventions to add joy to people's life, not take it away.
Yeah. And in terms of amount, like, do you have any specified amount of green tea?
Some of the studies did find kind of like a linear association. The more green tea you have, the more protective the effects. But something like Dr. Gavi and I have also talked about is like when you have more green tea, like what are the other like confounding factors? So like if you're having more green tea, are you also having maybe like a salad for lunch? Are you doing yoga in the morning? What are the other things that are coming along with that choice that, you know, kind of reduce your risk even further? So I think that's something to consider.
My sense of it is that, you know, 1 to 2 cups a day, I don't think people should go overboard on anything. I do think that variety is and balance are important. And so I think people probably shouldn't have too much of any one substance. But I think probably, I don't know, 1% of the US has green tea every day, a very small number. So we should all be drinking more green tea and just have a reasonable amount. I think that's why having these foods as part of a food and not a supplement, whether it's soy or tomatoes or cruciferous vegetables, you can only eat so much broccoli in a day. But we don't want people to overdo it on supplements. They probably don't work and they could be harmful. But I think we want people to have a reasonable amount, sensible is what I would say.
Something to think about as well is if you're having green tea, what are you not having instead of green tea? So like if you're having green tea, maybe you're not having soda. Maybe you're not having a high sugar juice. So that's also a great alternative for maybe another drink that you might have that wouldn't have that same benefit. But again, in moderation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, I think when you look at the starting point, like what's on the American plate, I think it's about 8% fruits and vegetables combined. And we're talking tomatoes combined with all the cruciferous and all the fruit, right? So tell me about soy. Now, that gets a lot of controversial comments when it comes to cancer prevention.
You know, it's interesting to me that it's so controversial. You probably almost definitely know more than I do about some of these things, but I do think that people are concerned that soy can look like estrogen and there's some similarities, and that if people have too much soy, that may be too much estrogen and that may increase the risk of breast cancer. But my understanding of food studies in women who've had cancer, that actually soy is protective. Soy as a food is overall protective. And so it's not clear to me why there's sort of this controversial buzz. Overall, for prostate cancer, it does appear to reduce the risk. But again, it's back to the food. Edamame, soy is part of food, not any supplement and not mega doses.
In our book, we kind of like let the data speak for itself. Like we didn't want to draw any conclusions for people or like push them in one direction or another. We just wanted to take the raw data that was out there and present it to people in a way that they could understand it. And from the data we found, it was all in a positive direction or a neutral direction. The majority of the studies did show a positive association between eating more soy and reducing risk for prostate cancer. There were a few studies that were neutral, but we weren't able to find any that had a negative association.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I actually think the controversy is from maybe a few very poorly conducted studies. But when you look at data, whether it's breast cancer, prostate cancer, I don't even understand where the controversy comes from. I'm kind of with you. I think there were just a few really poor studies and some that went down a different path with that. And how much soy should a person try and get?
I don't know if we have a great answer. You know, soy is such a small part of our diet that if we have a serving or two a day, I think that's a good amount. So the studies don't give us that much information about how much. And so I would say 1 to 2 servings a day is a sensible amount as part of a varied diet.
And again, it's a cost-benefit analysis, right? If you're having, you know, a serving of soy, what are you having it instead of? Like maybe that's your source of protein instead of a steak, which could have a really detrimental effect. And instead, you're giving yourself health positive effects.
Yeah, no, it's a great protein. So in terms of food, so those are the big four. Are there others that you guys would recommend for prevention? Anything else that you think is really impactful if you were to cherry pick, no pun intended, foods for prostate cancer?
I think generally speaking, plant-based salads. I mean, there's probably other healthy plants that are helpful. They didn't hit the signal as large as some of these specific foods, but they share a lot in common. And there are studies looking at just general plant-based. And so I would say general plant-based foods, whatever people enjoy and variety.
Right. We like focused the vegetable chapter on cruciferous vegetables, but we also did find quite a few studies that just talked about vegetables in general and having like a plate full of colorful vegetables. So you're getting like the full array of antioxidants, the full array of benefits, and then like whole grain, whole plant, whole foods as they come.
And if some of the people listening may be in middle age and at an age where they're already at risk just by age alone, if they switch to eating plant-based, especially focusing on these four kind of power foods for prostate cancer prevention, is there any sense of time frame where they need to be doing this type of diet to get the benefits from prevention? I know it's obviously a kind of gradient, if you will, but any data around timing and making changes?
I think probably the timing is immediate in terms of the benefit. There are studies that look at prostate cancer in a test tube and adding lycopene extract, and those cells just stop multiplying immediately. And so I think the benefit of these healthy nutrients that come into your body, there's almost an immediate impact. There are also studies that people who already have cancer experience benefit from a food approach within months or years, demonstrable benefit. And so there's probably pretty quick effect, again, because you're putting these nutrients into intimate contact with the cells in your body.
For prostate cancer specifically, it is a very like slow progressing cancer. So for very early stages, sometimes the mainstay treatment is to actively surveil. And for men who are in that stage of active surveillance, who have like altered their diet towards like more of a whole plant, whole like vegetable-based diet, they have found that their prostate cancer has like regressed. Like they've been able to halt the progression of their prostate cancer. So there's effects, like Dr. Gavi is saying, immediately and like at any point in this process, you can see those positive effects.
And I'm glad you guys went to, you know, this during the treatment course, the effects of it, right? Because we started talking in the beginning about the devastating side effects of the treatment. And I know we've been focusing our conversation around prevention, but if people have already been diagnosed and they switch to doing plant-based, how well or what's the impact on the trajectory of their illness?
I think it's difficult to know. And I think it's always important to put out front, this isn't a substitute for traditional medical care for prostate cancer, that people obviously should work closely with our medical oncologists or urologists and follow their recommendation. I do think that prostate cancer is a spectrum of diseases. And I do think that in probably most stages, the diet will have an impact. But for some people, it's monitoring the PSA every 6 months for 5 or 10 years before there's any action done. And so potentially, the diet can put off any intervention like removal of the prostate or maybe by years. And that's obviously a benefit. So I think it's difficult to give an answer because it's such a variety of prostate cancer. But the point is that it would help either suppress it or slow it down and just give people more time in a surveillance period before they need to have any treatment.
Right. And just to clarify, active surveillance is like a process done with your physician. This is not like you alone actively surveilling your own situation. This is like very much not recommended in replacement of going to your physician and having these discussions with them.
Those are great points. Maya, Benny, is there anything you wish people knew that we haven't had a chance to talk about?
I guess I would say I really encourage people to read the book. We wrote it because I really believed in the science of it. And I think the stories are really impactful. It's almost shockingly surprising how strong the data is. And when Maya and I wrote the book, our point was not to tell like our story, but to really tell the story of the research. And for us to kind of get out of the way and let people read the research in a way that was accessible and make up their own mind about what they wanted to do. So we really wanted people to experience the depth and the breadth of the data as firsthand as possible. And so I encourage people to engage with some of the science because I think it's transformative once you see the power of the science, and I'd like for people to experience that directly.
Yeah, if I can leave you just with one study that we talk about in the book, the ones that was most impactful for me was a study that was done in which men's blood was taken before they exercised and mixed with prostate cancer cells, and then compared to their blood after only a single hour of exercise, mixed with prostate cancer cells as well. And their blood was able to fight the cancer off 31% more effectively in that study, after just 1 hour of exercise. So if you take that and like think about what that could become, what could 2 hours do? What could a week's worth of exercise do? Starting small is okay. Doing what you can in your lifestyle is okay. And just going from there, it is going to make a difference.
Yeah. What motivation. Benny, Maya, thank you so much. Thanks for doing all the work and the research. I think prostate cancer and the prevention doesn't nearly get the attention it deserves for how common it is and how much it impacts our patients' lives. And putting this together in a book, doing it the way you guys have to make it so evidence-based, so research-focused, but so practical is just such a great resource. So thank you for the work that you've done and for all the information that you've shared today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for allowing us to share the word and the work.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. Until next time, do something to help improve your whole health naturally.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.